It's amazing. I'm watching the swelling go down. My knees and ankles are returning to their normal size right in front of my eyes. I can't believe it. All he did is touch me. And then, almost immediately, he's sending me out the door. Who am I? Who am I? Any guesses?
Somebody in the Bible.
Very good.
You
get 2 points. No other guesses? Well, this is a hard one, I must admit, because we don't know what the word dropsy means. This is a story in Luke chapter 14 of the man with dropsy. Do you know what dropsy means? No, but that's a good guess. Oh, well, I know what dropsy means, but do you know what dropsy means? No. Leanne is still fishing for the definition. I gave you a big clue in the little "Who Am I" story. Yes. Dropsy is the old English word for edema. Yes. Swelling. And we... I guess so. It's a word that simply describes the symptom. It doesn't tell you what causes it. And so there could be any number of things causing dropsy. But there was... there's a brief story in the Bible about a man healed from dropsy in Luke 14. So open your Bibles there. Luke 14, verse 1. And I would love to have a volunteer who will read 6 verses for us. Luke 14, 1 through 6. Okay.
And it came to pass, 1 through 6, right?
Yes.
And it came to pass, as he went up into the house of one of the chief Pharisees to eat bread on the Sabbath day, that they watched him. And behold, there was a certain man before him which had the dropsy. And Jesus answering, spake unto the lawyers and Pharisees, saying, is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath day? And they held their peace. And he took him and healed him, and let him go. And answered them, saying, which of you shall have an ass or an ox fallen into a pit, and will not straightway pull him out on the Sabbath day? And they could not answer him again to these things.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
When does this story take place?
On the Sabbath.
On the Sabbath. And why is that significant in the story?
Because they were always...
Yes, all right. Specifically the Pharisees. I don't know that we ever run into the Sadducees criticizing him for Sabbath observance. The Sadducees were so liberal they barely believed in God anymore. But the Pharisees and teachers of the law did. And there's this ongoing dispute about the lawfulness specifically of healing on the Sabbath. By the way, why is Jesus there for lunch rather than somewhere else that particular day? I realize there are all kinds of possibilities, but just at the raw human level, he didn't eat at this house every day, did he? No, it's not his house. So why is he there this particular day? Okay, and I'm thinking at the human level. If I don't eat lunch at your house every day, and one day I happen to find myself eating lunch at your house, what probably happened?
You were invited.
Yes, right? Jesus was there, probably not just because of God's leading in his life, all right? Because if that was the case, he would be knocking on the door saying, the Lord has revealed to me that I'm to eat at your house today, right? But we don't see any sense of that. like he did with Zacchaeus. He seems to be there, probably because he was invited, right? This isn't his normal thing. Why was he invited? Yes, it certainly seems to be the case, right? That they wanted to keep a close eye on him, watch him for what? We're in Luke 14, verses 1 through 6.
There was more than just that sheep that was the owner of that house.
Well, apparently, yes, it speaks in the plural about the Pharisees, right? So he threw a Sabbath lunch and invited Jesus and 500 of his closest friends. All right, so he was there to be carefully watched. Well, what did they want to see?
Maybe they said he
made
a mistake.
What? Oh, they wanted to see him make a mistake, right? That is a very distinct possibility. And it seems like the issue in front of them is the issue in front of Jesus. They wanted to see what he would do with the man with dropsy, it seems. By the way, why is the man with dropsy there? Is this his house? Does he eat here every day?
Maybe he was a servant.
It's possible.
It doesn't say what he was there for.
No, it doesn't say what he was there for. But do we have any indication? Is this his house?
He sent him away. Oh,
yes, Jesus sent him away. And he left. So we would have to assume it's not his house. So does he eat here every day? What's he doing here?
So we know it wasn't this guy.
Okay, very good. Yes, yes, that's very excellent understanding.
He didn't stop by to see Jesus.
Okay, and we don't know for sure, although do you imagine that if you just stopped by at a Pharisee's house when he was throwing lunch and that you would get in to see Jesus?
Maybe he delivered some food.
It is entirely possible. All of these things are entirely possible. Although, I'm very curious about Bev's proposal.
What did she say? That they were setting Jesus up by putting him down there.
That it is entirely possible that he's here by invitation just as much as Jesus is. This isn't his house. He doesn't eat here every day. It may very well not be an accident.
Because he was already there.
He was already there. And how does it describe where in the house he was?
He was just there.
Well, it uses a specific word or phrase.
In front of him.
In front of him whom?
Jesus.
In front of Jesus. Now, this word, in front of him, is a fairly specific word that is not subtle. It's the same word that is used in Luke 5:19 for the man let down through the ceiling. In front of Jesus. Couldn't miss him. Yes, the Pharisees.
So had their liars there.
Yes, well, the word for they were trying to sue him. The word for lawyers gets translated in a lot of translations, teachers of the law, and they're not necessarily distinct classes of people. Not all of the teachers of the law might have been Pharisees, and not all of the Pharisees were teachers of the law. But the teachers of the law were the group of people, just so you know, they were the group of people whose job it was to decide whether the law applied in this situation or didn't apply in this situation. Does that make sense to you? So this was their cup of tea to figure out whether the law against work applied if a person was sick and came to be healed. Or whether it didn't apply if a person was sick and came to be healed. Do you understand what I'm saying? Their job was to figure out the scope of the law. And they took it very seriously. And they had very definite opinions about the scope of the law. They had, for instance, a belief about this specific question. That if it was an acute illness, right? If you were going to die, if you weren't treated. That the law against working on Sabbath did not apply. In that situation, and you could be treated, right? The emergency room operated on Sabbath according to the teachers of the law. However, if what you had was a chronic illness, It didn't just come on yesterday. It's not going to kill you before Monday. You could not go to the emergency room and be treated, because the law against Sabbath work does apply for healers dealing with chronic illnesses. If it could wait till Monday, you got to wait till Monday, or in their case, probably Sunday, right? When business is opened again and so on. So this was the work of the teachers of the law, and the Pharisees were very closely tied with them. They were the people who argued for a tighter and more constricting reading of the law, where Sadducees and others probably advocated a more open, liberal reading of the law. All right? So, it's entirely possible that this is a setup. How does Jesus read the situation? How well does he seem to understand what is going on? And how do we know?
And the answer is that he spoke to the lawyers, so he at least recognizes the lawyers are all there. And he talks about the law. Is it lawful? So
he seems, his first thing out of his mouth is, all right, I can see why I'm here. Let's get this out of the way up front. Yeah, I think there are a few other places where he was at a Pharisee's house for a meal. Yeah. He jumps on the issue, right? He sees through what they're doing very, very simply and easily. Probably. Jesus was pretty tricky that way.
They watched him closely, so you know he couldn't miss that.
Oh, yeah. They're, you know, I mean, you can see the scene. Jesus comes in the house. Here's the guy standing right in the entryway, you know. And they're all standing around in a semicircle, you know, staring at Jesus, and he says, okay, so let's cut right to the chase. Is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath day or not? What response does he get? Stony silence. How likely is it that Jesus knew he'd get that response? Yeah, it's pretty likely. Like Anna said, he probably knew this was waiting for him when he got there, and he's not at all surprised to get silence. So why would he ask? You know, if you know you're not going to get an answer, why ask a question?
He knew what they were thinking.
All right. He knew what they were thinking. Right. So by asking the question, he is communicating to them what he communicated to us as we read. I know what you guys are up to. Right. I recognize a trap when I smell one. What else? What other purposes does asking that question serve?
They have to examine their own motives.
All right. Even if they're not going to answer him, he makes them think by asking that question. Now, do they already know in their own hearts and minds what they believe about this issue?
Sure.
Yeah, they already have an opinion. Jesus and they have been in arguments about this before. So Jesus also is not asking for information. Even if they did answer him, he already knows what they think. So he asks to make them think possibly. He asks to let them know, I know what you're up to. Anything else? Any other purposes that would be served by asking this question?
When it gets recorded in the Bible, then we have a reference so we know what it is. He always seems to preface what the issue is and something with a question, so we know what the point of the passage is.
And it's very interesting. This is a pattern that God has going clear back to the Garden of Eden. Right? When somebody is up to no good, God asks questions first. He doesn't always get decent answers. You remember he asked Adam and Eve, where are you? Well, did he know where they were?
Sure.
Of course he did. But by asking the question, he made them think, now, where am I? And what am I doing here?
And why am I here?
And why am I here? He asked Elijah in the cave,
right.
What are you doing here?
Right.
Well, maybe Elijah hadn't thought about what he was doing there yet. Maybe that's why he was there. God is in the business. We Seventh-day Adventists often call it the investigative judgment. Right? But God is in the business of investigative, of asking people questions, of, in some sense, putting them on trial, not because he doesn't know the answers, but so that people will either condemn or acquit themselves with their own words. Does that make sense? So that people will recognize, oh, I got myself in this situation without any help from anyone else. And I guess if I repented, I could get myself out of it. Or I could fall on God's mercy and get out of it just as well. So Jesus is sort of turning the tables on them a little bit. They put him in a trap. And now he says, I see that this is a trap. So let me set you a little difficult situation to be in as well. What happened? Well, we'll come back to that. They're silent. What are their options, however, if they were to answer? And it's pretty much a yes or no answer. Is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath or not? Jesus gives them two options. What if they say yes? Meaning it's okay.
Why did you set me up?
Well, and they would ask themselves, well, why did we go to all the trouble of setting him up if we're just going to give in and say yes? All right. So certainly that one's out. But again, why? What? Why wouldn't they want to say yes? Why wouldn't they want to admit, yeah, it's fine? What are the repercussions and ramifications for them if they say, sure, it's fine?
They couldn't pick on him because they were agreeing with him.
Right, they couldn't pick on him because they were agreeing with him. This is a very insightful comment that you just made because it lets us know what they're all about in the first place. What did you say?
I brought this job.
Well, when it comes back. So they're not willing to agree with him because really what they want to do is get him. And if they agreed with him, well, that goes out the window. What were you going
to
say?
Well, they had witnesses there to prove, in other words, try to prove their case, because they knew their motive, why they were doing it, and what the outcome they hoped would be.
All right, well, we'll come back to that in just a second, because I'm very curious about what were they after, what were they hoping for, but don't answer that just yet. Any other comments about why they wouldn't say yes? Go ahead. Yeah. If they say yes, it has far, far reaching implications. Because, again, they've been having this argument with Jesus for some time. And if they come out now and admit, you know what, Jesus, you're right. Here's what happens. They're the big chiefs at the top who tell everybody else when the law applies and when it doesn't apply. Right? Everybody comes to them when they want to know, well, will we get in trouble with God if we do this? Or are we okay? They like sitting up there at the top and having other people come to them to be told what to do. They like being able to send down rulings and you know, write the application of the law in ways that suits them and doesn't suit the people they don't like. And here comes this upstart Galilean rabbi from nowhere, got no credentials, no training, and didn't have to go to their school, got all these people following him, and is trying to tell all the people and them how to obey the law, how to observe the law, when the law counts and when it doesn't, right? When the law applies and when it doesn't. If they give in and agree with him, now it's like this. Now they're taking direction from this upstart rabbi from nowhere And he's telling them how to run their jobs. How excited about that are they? They are not very excited about that. Because in all their interactions with him so far, he applies the law very impartially. And all the ways that they've been writing it and rewriting it to suit themselves go out the window. This is a major threat. Jesus accused them of all kinds of hypocritical behavior and said, well, you say that, you know, you're supposed to honor your father and mother. But you've got this thing set up where if you give your property to the temple, to God, you can continue to live in your house. This was they actually had done this. It's kind of like a what do they call it? Not a revocable living trust. What is it when you make a charitable gift annuity? I don't know. Maybe you
reverse
familiar with this. Kind of like a reverse mortgage. Anyway, a charitable gift annuity. You basically give an organization all your money, and they promise to pay you a monthly thing out of it until you die. And so you still get to sort of live off of your income, but you get tax breaks and other stuff because you've given the money to somebody else. Well, they had this thing set up that if you gave your property to the temple, you could continue to live in the house and so on until you die. And when you die, it goes to the temple. To the exclusion of taking care of your own aged parents. And so you could say, well, I haven't got any money to care for my parents because it belonged to the temple. And so they would rewrite, you know, the law in all these ways that favored them. And Jesus wouldn't buy any of that. And so here they are. If they say, yes, you're right, all these things they've been doing to favor themselves go out the window. And here they've become disciples of Jesus and they're going to have to follow him around. They don't like that. They're not interested in that. They've got to find some way to point out that we're right and Jesus is wrong. And it's interesting that they hit on these Sabbath questions because they can't find anything wrong with Jesus. He's such a perfect guy. I mean, he was perfect. They couldn't find anything to pick on. He didn't have skeletons in the closet. And all they can come up with is these little nitpicky questions that are really very disputable about whether this is a constitutes emergency room treatment or not.
I never thought about that. His stuff would always revolve around the Sabbath. And most people use it because Jesus was teaching about the Sabbath. So discredit the Sabbath because Jesus was dealing with the Sabbath
right.
And how messed up they were, rather than it's really the flip.
They kept coming back to the Sabbath.
They were back on the Sabbath.
Because that was
against Jesus, not Jesus trying to.
Yeah, well, it goes a little bit both ways. Jesus was not happy with how they portrayed Sabbath and Sabbath keeping, and he was trying to correct that. But they keep coming back to him on this issue because they've got nothing else to go on.
But it matches that that's interesting in our, as Adventists, the worldview, you read a lot of our things that the issue in the end revolves around Sabbath, because one of those is it's an ambiguous.
Yeah.
If you go down and meet people who live there,
right. Yeah, but the Sabbath is arbitrary in some sense. Yeah.
They all follow the ninth commandment.
All right. So, they're not about to say yes, because that would be political and financial suicide. What if they say no? Why don't they say no? Well, this is a private audience, right? This is Pharisees and their lawyers, right? The teachers of the law, Jesus and one sick guy.
So they say no, they're probably right. They might change his behavior.
All right, well, that's an interesting concept. What? And this goes back to the question that Ken raised, and maybe we'll wander around the mountain here a little bit. What are the Pharisees hoping for? What do they want? What outcome are they after here? Or outcomes. What would make them happy? Well, yes, ultimately they want to kill him. But I mean in this situation right here. They're not about to take up knives and
try to embarrass him before all these people.
Well, again, it's just a private group, it seems like, you know, with the Pharisees. So what are they hoping he will do? I mean, if it's a setup, What are they hoping? What outcome are they hoping for?
They'll follow through with it. Go ahead and heal the man so that they can say, yes, they were right, he was wrong.
They probably want him to heal the guy so they can accuse him. Seems crazy, but that seems to be what they're after.
Well, they're waiting in the way because he doesn't heal them, and they go,
yes, he follows our way. So they'd probably be happy with either outcome. If he heals him, we'll nail him. If he doesn't heal him, then we say, oh, we're so glad you've come around. So it is possible that they don't say no because they don't actually want to discourage him from doing it. They don't want to show their hand. They don't want to admit this is a trap. It's also possible that they don't say no because they've been in arguments with Jesus before. Guess who always wins? Jesus always wins. Whenever they open their mouths, they just give him more ammunition to shoot them down. And the last time that they had a dispute with Jesus over this issue, it was in public, in the synagogue. And Jesus made them look stupid. And it says they were humiliated in front of all the people, but the people were delighted with everything Jesus was doing. Of course, they were silent then too. But they probably didn't open their mouths also, because they knew that Jesus could outtalk them and that it wouldn't stop him from following through. They would just, you know, if they say no, then he says, well, why not? And they start to give reasons and he says, yeah, but what about this and what about this and what about this? And they go, well, but, and he's going, but. They don't want to go there. So they figure, well, we'll keep the collateral damage to a minimum by keeping our mouths shut. We know he's going to go ahead and do it anyway. Why open our mouths and look stupid? So either way, if Jesus heals the man and they can... this brings to back to my other question. We need to come full circle again. So why does Jesus ask the question before he heals the man? What additional purpose does it serve? Knowing that they won't answer him.
He asks, is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath day?
Yeah. Why does he ask that question before he heals the man? What purpose does it serve? Especially since they don't answer him.
Well, he goes ahead and heals him, so he's saying it is lawful.
Well, he does seem to imply that by going ahead and healing. He gives his point of view. That's his answer to the question. But what does it do to the Pharisees?
Well, let them know
that
he knows what they're all
about. Yeah, we talked about that already. That he asks beforehand, is it lawful to do this or not? Especially when they don't answer him.
So it could be in the Bible.
They had their opportunity to say yes or no.
Yes, indeed. And when they didn't take the opportunity to say either yes or no, now that he's done it, what can they say? In other words, he took the bait out of their trap, ate it, and laughed at them. By asking the question up front, he gives them the opportunity to either acquit or condemn themselves before he follows through with the healing. And when they refuse to do either one, then they're stuck. They can't complain. How dare you heal him? You know that's wrong. He says, I just asked you whether I should do it or not. You didn't tell me I shouldn't do it, so how was I to know? I mean, aren't you guys the experts in the law? Isn't it your job to write opinions about when the law applies and when it doesn't apply? Why do you think I asked you? So he has neutralized the accusation by asking them for their opinion up front. Now, we noted what two outcomes would have made them happy. If Jesus had just gone ahead with the healing, they'd have jumped on him. Ah! And if Jesus had said, oh, well, I might get in trouble with the Pharisees and teachers of the law. I better not do it. I'll just go through the potluck line and eat some food. They'd have said, ah, gotcha. Either way, what's it about for the Pharisees and teachers of the law?
So he submitted to them basically like he did on the cross. Even then in this case, he...
That's kind of funny. He did what they wanted.
In a way, by submitting to his fellow man.
Yeah.
In a way, I mean...
He did what they wanted, but not in the way they wanted. What was it about for the Pharisees and teachers of the law? Ultimately, what's the issue? What's their goal? To prove him wrong, but again, in the bigger sense, what's that about for them?
They want to be like God. Control.
It's about control. It's about power. Yeah. They want to prove him wrong to make themselves right. Yes.
But then he gives them an example, and there's nothing they could say because they knew that the example that he gave them, that, in other words...
Let's come to that in a second, because Jesus doesn't stop there. He does go on a little bit farther. When they refuse to answer, how well does that suit Jesus' purpose?
Go ahead. They don't, not complaining.
Yeah, if you're not going to answer, makes me perfectly happy. Because you can't complain when I'm done. All right? So he goes right ahead. What does he do? Three things. Do you notice?
He took him, he healed him, and let him go.
He takes hold of the man. He heals him. And let him go. It actually, I think, I think the translation sends him away. Gives us a clearer sense of it. Although... I would have to go back and check for sure. But the implication seems to be that he actually has him leave the place. Why did he send him away? Why would he have this guy leave? I mean, this was a great miracle. Here was the centerpiece of his miracle. They had set the man in his face, right in front of him. Why doesn't Jesus set the man at the head of the table? Right in front of them.
If he had compassion for the man, if I'd just been healed, they wouldn't want to stick around a bunch of Pharisees.
Amen. Absolutely. I think, you know what, did you notice what's totally missing in this story of miraculous healing that is present in many of Jesus' other miraculous healing stories?
There was not the multitudes.
Well, okay, yes, not the multitudes, but... Well, he didn't say go and don't tell anyone. Of course, the miracle happened right in front of people.
The man didn't say anything. He didn't say, oh, thank you. Or,
yeah, all right. We don't have any words from the man. We don't. It's silence, but it's left out. Who else doesn't say anything? And what specific kind of response that's typical when Jesus heals someone miraculously is just totally missing.
Tell anybody, and then he says, go and sin no more.
I mean response from the people. Well, there's no accusation, but more common than accusation when Jesus heals somebody. Yes! People are excited! There's joy! There's celebration! The guy's jumping up and down! Woohoo! And the people all praised God that such things would be done. Where is that? Totally absent. Now, if you're the healed man, right? You're standing there going, whoa! And everybody's looking at you. Would you want to hang around? So absolutely, I think it's merciful of Jesus. He's saying, get out of here. Go home. Find some people who will be glad you're healed. Who wants to eat lunch with a bunch of sour grapes? And so he sends him home with no lunch. I don't know for sure, but it seems like all this happens before the meal. Sends him home with no lunch. The man doesn't care. Why is there no celebration? They are not. Yeah, isn't this very interesting? What does this tell us then about the attitudes of the Pharisees toward the man with dropsy and toward Jesus? How do they, what was their, how do they view Jesus and the man with dropsy? Yeah, they didn't care about whether he got healed or not. They'd have been just as happy if he didn't get healed. They wished that he'd gotten healed under the right circumstances so they could accuse Jesus, but they didn't care about him at all. Here they've made a pretense of offering Jesus hospitality, right? Oh, come on over for lunch. But what's their real attitude? Yeah, we want you to come on over and be lunch.
Yeah.
We don't want to feed you. I mean, this isn't really a hospitable invitation. This is an inhospitable invitation. Come on over into my little trap. Well, the way you treat a rat with a piece of cheese and a steel spring. What does this story reveal to us, finally, about the Pharisees' picture of God?
I think they're saying Abraham's seed is privileged.
That God has favorites? Anything else? Does it reveal about their picture of God?
It seemed that they feel above God, that they're making the rules, because they have God right in front of them.
Well, do they recognize that?
No.
Apparently
but
not.
Their actions.
They're
playing God.
Yeah, they are playing God. That's very insightful.
Yeah.
But what kind of a God are they playing?
Adam.
In other words, they are acting like they think God would act. So what kind of a God do they worship? Well, I would hope. What is their picture of God? One who is not merciful. One who, if he came upon you on the Sabbath day and you were sick, would say, come back Monday.
Which is Satan to you, the whole last book of the Bible.
Oh. Very interesting.
There's sick people. It's time to be with God on the rest time.
Hmm.
And you're not worthy of being healed that day. And God uses an example. If an animal falls in the pit, and that's what it discusses lots of this, and we're down in this bottomless pit, and that's where Satan gets chained up for the power of years.
You'd pull it out.
You pull it out.
And what kind of a time frame?
Why not a sick person that needs healing? Sabbath is a time to take people who are sick and heal them.
Mm.
Not, and almost all of his issues on the Sabbath, they were healed. day, he's going to say, these people aren't worthy of being healed. Jesus is going to come and say, I think that's the whole point.
Yeah.
I'm going to heal them and take them, let them go, and get to remain down here in the pit if you want. Yes.
Do they view illness as a result of sin? And so they're saying, you know, we have no mercy.
Isn't that interesting? They probably think that the illness was brought on by God, that it was a punishment from God. So certainly you could wait till Monday. God gave you this. That's kind of a scary thought. What else is in their picture of God? If they're acting like the God they believe in, what business is the God they believe in? Ooh. Ooh. And the rest of us are just pawns to be used to keep himself on top. In fact, he's looking for an opportunity. Watching very carefully. I saw you come into my house, Ken. On the seventh day. And you messed up. And now I'm going to accuse you. Their God is waiting, looking, watching for an opportunity to accuse and destroy. On the Sabbath day, no less. I mean, this is the incredible irony. The incredible irony is that Jesus wants to heal and free a man on the Sabbath day. They say, wait till Monday. But while they're saying, wait till Monday, they have set up a trap on the Sabbath day to try to find some way to destroy Jesus on the Sabbath day. And they don't think there's anything strange about that. This is a perfectly wonderful part of Sabbath observance. Let's have a man over and have him for lunch. Let's see if we can get him to come into our house and take the bait. And then we'll get him. Happy Sabbath. And so what contrasting picture of God does Jesus portray, especially in his next statement? This is where you were going a minute ago. What contrasting picture of God does Jesus portray, especially in that last few words that he gets in here?
A caring God, a merciful God, a friend of everybody.
Yes.
Even the animals.
A friend of sinners, a friend of the broken,
right.
A friend of the fallen. I love the way he says, but wouldn't you, if your ox or your donkey or some manuscripts say son, were to fall into a ditch on the Sabbath day, would you wait till Monday to pull him out? Wouldn't you, what's the word? Immediately pull him out. What picture of God is Jesus portraying? A God who's looking for an opportunity to help immediately.
Not a peer, but something that's a subservient creature. That
he's looking for an opportunity to help immediately. Not putting off till Monday. God is waiting immediately to bless those who are in trouble, who are in need, who are stuck, who are scared, who are hurting. Huh. How much sense does it make for the Pharisees to be trying so hard to assert their right to interpret the law over Jesus' right to interpret the law? Now, Ken was touching on this earlier. How much sense does it make for this group of men to be insisting, no, 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 we'll tell you how to interpret the law?
They're playing God.
How much sense does it make for them to say that to Jesus? Why? I agree with you. Why?
That's Lucifer's, they're playing his part, his role.
It's true. Who is Jesus?
God.
He is the lawgiver. If anybody could tell us how to interpret the law, it would be Jesus. The Pharisees should be signing up for his class, not telling him what to do. They should be saying, I don't know, is it right or not? Tell us.
They got off on the wrong track a long time ago. They didn't seem to understand what the lamb was that was sacrificed in the sanctuary.
Mm. They certainly didn't. They don't know who Jesus is. If they did, they'd be saying, please, teach us. They don't know what they have already. The great privilege of dining with Jesus, of seeing him heal. These guys have the privilege of rejoicing over a broken person being made whole. They don't see it. And they don't know what they need. If God is as exacting as they make him out to be, those Pharisees are in trouble. If their picture of God that they insist on is right, they're history. Because here they are, trying to figure out how to kill a man on the Sabbath day. God would not approve of that sort of Sabbath keeping. These Pharisees need a merciful God who is waiting immediately to pull them out of trouble. And instead of raising their hands and saying, help us, they're digging the hole deeper and deeper and deeper. So how about you? Do you know who Jesus is? Have you signed up for his class? Or would you still like to tell him how he ought to run his universe? Run into people who would like to tell me, oh, I don't think God is very serious about this. I think he'll overlook this. Jesus knows how to interpret his own law. He knows how to teach us what's right and what's not. We need to learn from him how to be merciful, how to be loving. Do you know what a privilege you have? Being able to sit at his table, be on the inside to see the people that he's healed and healing, to worship with them, to take note of all the God stories, what he's doing, and rejoice and celebrate? And do you know what you need? Are you reaching up your hands, saying, Lord, have mercy on me, a sinner. I'm sure glad you're kinder to me than I would even imagine. That just blows my mind. Jesus tells these guys, you're nicer than your picture of God. Because if you came across an oxen whole, you'd pull him out on the seventh day. But the God you worship wouldn't. Get a clue. Aren't you glad that the God of heaven is nicer than we can imagine? And kinder. And better. I need a merciful God who's waiting to pull me out of the trouble that I'm in. How about you? Leanna, can you play number 460? As Water to the Thirsty. It's not one that we've done a lot, but we've done it a couple times.
460.
460.
Assuming you played your honor right after this.
Oh.
So he doesn't fail to encourage.
He certainly doesn't. We're going to continue on with that next sermon. But it's just shocking, the stuff that he will say to these guys, knowing that it's going to offend them. It's amazing. As water to the thirsty, as beauty to the eyes, as strength that follows weakness, as truth instead of lies, as song time and spring time and summer time to be, so is my Lord, my living Lord, so is my Lord to me. Like calm in place of clamor, like peace that follows pain, like meeting after parting, like sunshine after rain, like moonlight and starlight and sunlight on the sea, so is my Lord, my living Lord, so is my Lord to me. As sleep that follows fever, as gold instead of gray, as freedom after bondage, as sunrise to the day, as home to the traveler, and all he longs to see, so is my Lord, my living Lord, so is my Lord too. Father God, you are better to us than we would be to ourselves and than we are to ourselves in so many cases. Forgive us and pull us out of the pit which we have dug, we pray. Amen.